You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I was 23 when I became a citizen. But like, even as a 23-year-old raising my hand and becoming a citizen, I was like, do Americans know that they have to do this?
I'm Kevin Blyer, the host of The Backdrop. And that was Arian Moyad, the founder of Waterwell, a civic-minded theater company. And he's explaining just one of the questions at the heart of The Courtroom, which is right in line with Waterwell's core mission.
So I think the impetus for The Courtroom, like the impetus for a lot of Waterwell projects and shows and stuff that we do, is trying to respond to the world that's around us.
And they head smack into that world. You might have seen Waterwell's show on The Intrepid. Yes, that Intrepid, the one on the Hudson. Called The Blueprint Specials, it was a site-specific musical about musicals commissioned by the U.S. Army and starring Laura Osnes. Since then, they've staged a Persian-themed Hamlet with Farsi passages. Arian himself tackled that role of a lifetime. And The Fleet Week Follies, a festival of music and activities for active military and veterans. Their latest play? A play that has, well, no playwright, no stage directions, not even a theater. We'll get to that. But it definitely has a point of view.
If as an immigrant, like, we are so desperate to participate in this thing that Americans have, and you know, it's, and oftentimes it's effed, and oftentimes it's wrong, and this time it isn't.
This Time It Isn't is the unique perspective of The Courtroom, a play invoking verbatim immigration court transcripts about what threatens to be a heartbreaking deportation of an immigrant from the Philippines. And it was the vision of an immigrant from Iran.
In 2018, during the separation of children at the border, I, as an immigrant from Iran, was in Chicago at the time doing a show at Steppenwolf, oddly, and I was hanging out with my mom.
By the way, if Arian sounds familiar, that's because he is. He plays Stewie on HBO's Succession. But as you'll hear, he's not nearly the jerk Stewie is. No. In real life, Arian's the kind of guy who starts theater companies, gets nominated for Tonys, and yeah, hangs out with his mom.
I was hanging out with my mom, and she essentially said how devastating this was, not only for the kids, but also devastating that it is for America. Because we as immigrants have such a deep place in our hearts for this country, because the country gave us an opportunity to do stuff where... in many places that we don't have those opportunities. And that impacts me specifically because, you know, on my mom and my dad's side, we are the only immediate family here in the United States. So hearing that from my mom, who is really gung-ho about the American dream and still, I think, will always be, you know, it felt like a time to, like, respond to this crisis. And I don't know how, like, it all happened, but in my mind, I thought, well, what does a deportation proceeding look like? I don't know why it went there. And then I asked, like, let's find as many transcripts of, like, immigrants on trial, I guess.
Arian wanted to create a play about a deportation proceeding. But, like a constitutional lawyer itching for the right case to take all the way to the Supreme Court, he needed just the right case with just the right plaintiff.
you know, the miracle of miracles, weeks later, this case came on my computer screen, and the case was really, really complicated. And for me, the thing that really I connected with was the immigrant on the stand, which is Elizabeth Keithley, who is a Filipino immigrant who just came to the States with a K-3 visa. She married an American, and at the DMV was asked, would you like to be an organ donor, and would you like to register to vote? And not knowing anything about the laws of the land, she said, sure, if it's going to get me my state ID.
But she didn't just register. She actually voted in the 2006 congressional election, even displaying her I voted sticker like a proud citizen. But she wasn't a citizen. And there you have it. The stuff of drama, a complicating incident.
And that, reading the transcripts of her talking about that, was so resonant for me because, I mean, as of yesterday, literally, with my mom, I'm constantly dealing with language issues that my parents might be going through because it's tricky. You know, it's just tricky. People talk fast. They came here in their 40s. You know what I mean? It's like...
It's the DMV.
It's the DMV. And also, in her mind, she said, organ donor, would you like to register to vote? Like, in her mind, I could totally see my mom making a mistake. I've been there. I have literally been with, like, mom, no, don't sign up for that. That's not what's happening. That's... No. She doesn't want that. And so that was the kernel of really what got me.
So Ariane had his subject. He'd take those lines and write other lines and make a play, right? Dramatize it all. Not quite. Because he saw the virtue and virtuosity in the words themselves.
And there's this one line in it that I will not forget. And again, you're reading a transcript, and transcripts are very, you know, they're dry. And so it doesn't say, like, you know, the person cries or this person laughs. It just, like, keeps going, and she's explaining something. Elizabeth Keithley's explaining something. And the next, like, recorded line, and that who knows how long the pause was, would you like me to get you a tissue?
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We won't spoil what happens next, but having seen the play twice now, and soon a third, I'm compelled to step in here. As you can tell, this isn't a traditional play. It has some usual commandments of theater. Protagonists in the character and actual person of Elizabeth Keithley, who in the play is fighting to remain in the country, as did the IRL Elizabeth Keithley, and her lawyer fighting to help her remain with her family, also a protagonist. It has antagonists, too, a few judges and a DHS lawyer who, at first, seem hardly on her side. They're all played by a rotating cast of New York's theatrical A-list. Kathleen Chalfant, Stephanie J. Block, Brian D'Arcy James, Tommy Sadowski, Ruthie Ann Miles, and Kristen Villanueva, truly affecting as Elizabeth. For my money, though, the hero of the play is an idea. A legal idea called entrapment by estoppel, which sounds intriguing enough on its own that I needn't explain, other than to say, trust me, you'll be rooting for the idea as much as the characters. But it's an idea that seems to understand Elizabeth even more than Elizabeth can be understood by the judges to whom she pleads her case.
She did everything by the book, and she came here, and she practiced all of the rules and laws that the system has provided her. And she was deemed ineligible and inadmissible. And we as a human race can look at this and say, listen, we are either going to be able to understand that this person didn't mean to do this and can stay, or we have to figure out some sort of different laws.
A drama about a deportation featuring nothing more than the transcripts of the trial. So not a typical courtroom thriller, although it is thrilling. Not a typical courtroom drama, although it is dramatic. But most atypical for a night out at the theater, perhaps? The lack of a theater. The courtroom is held in city churches, civic buildings, and yes, courtrooms. To go to this play, you might have to go through a metal detector or two. Arian and Waterwell artistic director Lee Sunday Evans, who also directed The Courtroom, explain why.
I mean, why not just do it in the theater? Would the experience be fundamentally different?
Yeah, I think it would. Yeah. I think the reality is when you do it in a theater, you have now removed the veil of, you know, the reality of what's actually happening. When you go into a courtroom, there is a grandeur that you see, or a civic center. There's a grandeur and history and culture that's like seeping through the walls. But in an actual courtroom, you're also, lives are made and broken here, you know, and that a theater can try to recreate, but it won't have the same effect as an active courtroom. One. Two was, you know, we're a meager, small theater company, and to really kind of like do something that's impactful like this, bringing in the community with our means is kind of the most important thing. So to have it come to the people and their community is a really a good collaboration of the civic and art.
You know, it's interesting, when we were in the Thurgood Marshall Courthouse doing The Courtroom, we were all having this epiphany at the same time, which is that theater is, in a way, a kind of sacred space devoted to language, story, character. And a courtroom is also a kind of a temple dedicated to language in a really, really incredible way. And so I think we all had this experience when we were in the Thurgood Marshall Courthouse, which is where the Second Circuit Court of Appeals sits, that when you speak words about the fate of someone's life, the fate of this woman and her husband, and they had two children at this time, when you speak those words in this courtroom, they have an enormous amount of weight because the consequences that come with those words is quite weighty. And so there is something about doing this reenactment of this deportation proceeding in that courtroom that I think helped the audience access those stakes without recreating some of the archetypal conventions surrounding procedural dramas, which I love procedural dramas of all sorts. And we have a kind of amazing tradition in the United States of loving watching trials.
In New York.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and most actors have been hired on some version of Law and Order.
Yeah.
There have been more trials on Law and Order sets than there have been probably actual trials in New York.
So to do a piece about the legal system that would in some way illuminate the real granular details about the law felt actually really powerful to do in a courtroom where the stakes are very, very clear.
Clear stakes. And just upon walking in, I can attest it's an immediate feeling of solemnity, a sense of jeopardy. In a theater, the show must go on. In a real courtroom, Colonel Jessup gets hauled off to jail. All the more reason to get it word perfect.
When you were putting these transcripts together, you were diligent in keeping the word for word verbatim, and why was that important?
We did keep the text exactly as it's written in the transcripts, and we felt that was important because we really wanted people to get as close to the experience of what it's like to be in immigration court as possible. And we met this really remarkable former immigration lawyer and former immigration judge named Jeff Chase. And we were asking him about immigration court, and we were just starting to understand that immigration court is a civil court and not a criminal court. And so there's lots of things about the way that immigration court works that's very specific and unique to that court system. But he said, you can go down to 26 Federal Plaza and you can sit in immigration court and watch proceedings. They're public. And so Arian and I went down to immigration court and we sat and we watched a number of different court cases in different phases of their proceedings. And that deeply informed for us how we edited the text and how important we felt the mistakes were to capturing the quality of it being so extemporaneous. People are not prepared. They don't have a script, and the stakes are extraordinarily high. So the mixture of those two things really informs, I think, the way that you then receive the transcript and kind of unpack why people are saying things the way that they're saying them. And then that experience of sitting in immigration court also really informed the way that we then built the production and thought about how we were going to create a theatrical experience out of this incredibly granular, kind of very real world experience of sitting in immigration court.
Location, real. Dialogue, real. But what about the acting?
Arne and I collaborated a lot on how to create that sense of performance that was really trying to honor and do justice to what we saw in immigration court and how people behaved when they were in immigration court. You know, one thing that we decided to do that was not necessarily what I had thought from the beginning was we decided to create what are essentially kind of old-fashioned Shakespeare cue scripts so that the actors would actually be reading the text as opposed to memorizing the text. We didn't want the actors to be over-rehearsed, which is a little bit of a paradox because I deeply value rehearsal as a director, and I deeply value the clarity and the insight and the complexity and specificity that comes from rehearsal. But with this particular piece, that ended up being something that we felt was really important to being able to capture the way that people are thinking on their feet and thinking on the spot. Clearly, the lawyers are incredibly prepared, and Elizabeth Keithley and her husband, you know, were honestly telling their life story. But the quality of having to speak in a courtroom under that kind of pressure was actually, in a way, best accessed through this kind of technical task that we set up with the actors, where they had to really, really be on top of figuring out what they were going to be saying in the moment. So we tried to do that in a sly way where the audience wouldn't actually be able to tell that they were reading, but that it did something to the actor's performance of the text that I think was really specific.
An actor prepares. But, Ariane explained, there's no preparation for going up against the system.
Yeah, oh, wow. Yes. I think the one thing that we really learned when going into the immigration courts, outside of how DMV that is and people's lives are at stake, the thing that was amazing is that you can be as prepared as you want, whether you're the witness, the whatever, you can be as prepared as you want. But at the end of the day, when it comes to the time to do it, it's all out the door because you're just going to be thrown obstacles. What do you mean? Object? Like all of a sudden things are going to happen. And so all lawyers can't, you have to be prepared and ready to go, but you have to know that it's going to be, you're going to be winging it.
You don't have a script.
You don't have script. There's no script. And so the intensity of an actor, I say this as myself, as an actor, I haven't acted in this yet, but the intensity of an actor not being fully ready to go and doing a reading live in front of a bunch of people in a courtroom is really high, which is probably as close as we can get to the actual characters and their level of fear and uncertainty. And so emotions come rather quick, actually. That gives a quality of danger with regards to this thing because you don't know how this is gonna go.
And we won't spoil it by telling you how it goes, but we will tell you that off, well, stage, the courtroom has inspired another project that, as Ariane described Waterwell's mission, responds to the world around us. And it sprung from Ariane and Lee responding to a desperate plea.
So after we made the courtroom, we were speaking to a number of people around New York City about bringing performances of the courtroom to their spaces. And one type of place we were interested in bringing it was to law schools. So we had a relationship with this amazing organization called Broadway Advocacy Coalition, and they had a partnership with Columbia Law School and specifically the Immigrants' Rights Clinic. So we went with Broadway Advocacy Coalition to meet with the Immigrants' Rights Clinic at Columbia Law School to speak about the possibility of bringing the courtroom. And we sat down with Alora Mukherjee, who's the director of the Immigrants' Rights Clinic.
Actually, we'll let Alora take it from here.
My name is Elora Mukherjee. I teach law students who are interested in protecting immigrants' rights. We represent asylum seekers who are facing removal, facing deportation on a daily basis. Many of our clients are in detention settings in the New York, New Jersey area. Some of our clients are also detained along the border.
So when Lee and Arian asked you if you'd help out with the courtroom, naturally you said yes.
To which I responded, no, I can't do that. I can't do that at all.
She said, your project sounds really incredible, and it does shed light on the A1 immigration court system. But
I was just telling her, Lee, I'm sorry, I can't. I can't work on the courtroom.
I have to put all my focus right now into the an ongoing legal effort that's happening to...
I have all these kids who I need to help. There are hundreds of kids, thousands of kids who are being subject to the most appalling, degrading conditions imaginable. They're hungry. They're scared. They need to be with their families, and they're not being treated properly. And can you do anything for these kids? And despite how abruptly I had said no to Lee and to Ben on working on the courtroom, they were willing to talk to me and to listen to me as I described the plight of these children. From that conversation where I was quite rude and abrupt, and I've since apologized to Lee for it, the Flores Exhibits Project was born.
Okay, a little context. What entrapment by estoppel is to the courtroom, the Flores settlement agreement is to the Flores Exhibits, the hero of the idea. But I'll let Elora explain.
The Flores settlement agreement was reached in 1997 out of a case that was first filed in 1985. It is a class action settlement on behalf of children nationwide who are in federal immigration custody.
The Flores agreement sprang from, once again, a single case and a girl named Jenny Flores.
The lead plaintiff in the case was Jenny Flores, hold on. Do you want me to look up how old she was at the time?
Sure.
Okay.
Once again, as in the courtroom, the specifics matter. Facts matter. Actual words and, yes, ages matter.
So in 1995, a group of lawyers learned about Jenny Flores, at the time a 15-year-old girl who was held in immigration custody. And she was held among adults of both sexes. She was subjected to daily strip searches, and she was told that she would only be released to her parents, who at the time were undocumented immigrants. And the lawyers, understandably, were very distressed by what they had learned about Jenny's situation, and they filed a nationwide class action. Now, that case wound its way through the federal courts, including to the Supreme Court, until in 1997, there was a settlement agreement reached in the case. The 1997 Flores Settlement Agreement has many provisions. Among the most important provisions are that children must be released as promptly as possible from federal immigration custody. In addition, the agreement requires that when children are in federal immigration custody, that they be held in, quote, safe and sanitary conditions. And safe and sanitary requires that the detention centers have toilets and beds and sinks, and that children are offered sufficient food and are not subject to strip searches. And it was at the time a groundbreaking settlement agreement that provided far-reaching protections for children in federal immigration custody. But the case didn't end in 1997. Most recently, this summer, the federal government argued that the safe and sanitary provision means that the government does not need to provide children in Customs and Border Protection custody with soap, with toothbrushes, with toothpaste, with beds. So there's been a lot of litigation over what safe and sanitary means. A federal court judge ruled in August A panel of federal court judges ruled in August that, of course, safe and sanitary must mean that children are provided with basic hygiene items, adequate food, and a place to sleep.
And it's Alora's determination the agreement be honored that has kept her quite busy.
So for the last 12 years, I've been working with children in federal immigration custody, including interviewing them to determine if they're being held in compliance with the Flores Settlement Agreement. So in other words, I'm a court-approved monitor for the Flores Settlement Agreement when I visit children in detention. And in June of 2019, a team of lawyers and I visited children who were detained in Clint, Texas. And we saw children who were dirty, who were hungry, who were scared, who had been detained much longer than allowed under federal law. And we were really concerned about our findings. And usually when I do these visits, I need to sign a confidentiality agreement saying that I'll never talk beyond the Flores legal team about my findings. But the situation at Clint was so appalling that a number of us decided to go public with what we saw. And so we started speaking with the news media about our findings.
It's worth pointing out, you know, all this talk of whistleblowers, well, blowing this particular whistle, and not anonymously, ignited a firestorm of media coverage that even a very distracted DC couldn't ignore.
This is after having gathered hundreds of pages of sworn testimony from the children, and this led to congressional hearings over the summer about conditions in immigration detention with a focus on children and family separations and how children were not being treated appropriately in detention. And all of this snowballed into a moment where I was having a meeting in person at Columbia Law School with Lee. And then after that meeting, I sent them the hundreds of pages of sworn testimony by these children. And then Lee exercised enormous creativity and vision and pulled together the Flores exhibits. It's been phenomenal.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Enter Waterwell.
So what we decided to do was to take the testimonies in full without excerpting them, without editing them, and ask a kind of coalition of artists, lawyers, former immigration judges, advocates, and activists to read the testimonies on film, which we would then put online as a kind of art project about the incredibly important human story and incredibly important legal effort that are deeply entwined that relate to these detention facilities at the border. So that project became the Flores Exhibits, which you can visit online at www.flores-exhibits.org, where you can watch videos of these testimonies being read.
We responded to a need, and I gotta say, it's an incredible honor to be asked by someone like the incredible Alora Mukherjee to ask, be like, what can help us put this out there? That responsibility is something that we take very seriously, and the opportunity to even read the transcripts, much less do this, the Flores exhibits, is something that Waterwell is so, you know, is so nimble enough to like kind of like put together in a very quick way. And I have to say that the impact of these testimonies is more than just the stories that are painful. They are a hefty document of like so many stories of so many places, and this is just a drop of it, of a bigger thing. So you even if you can't stomach watching more than one or two or three of these videos online, the mass of it is such a statement within itself, not only just for us to do it, but for Alora and her team to document them, to have them. Yeah. We can barely read them without bawling the entire time.
Could I ask you, in your words, how would you characterize some of these stories?
The stories are heartbreaking. They are about children, including toddlers and babies, who have suffered among the worst traumas imaginable. The kids, some of them, have been separated from their parents. When the children are being interviewed, some of them are weeping inconsolably. We should be treating children with basic human dignity and with a recognition that children are particularly vulnerable. I have a hard time reconciling how this can be happening in America.
Many do, which is why Waterwell found so many takers when it came time to ask for people to offer their voice and give a voice to those who aren't allowed to speak for themselves.
So we have some really incredible actors and artists who have participated, including Kathleen Chalfant.
13. I, Dolly Lucio Sevier, MD, declare as follows.
David Henry Wong.
I, JVSM, declare under penalty of perjury that the following is true and correct to the best of my knowledge and
Elizabeth Rodriguez and David Schwimmer.
The U.S. Border Patrol got me within 5 minutes or so. They took me to a
along with James Udom and Sakina Jaffrey.
The food that we are getting here is not even suitable for dogs. The burritos they give us have rice and beans, but the rice is not cooked.
We also had Stephen Choi, who's the head of the New York Immigration Coalition. We had Melissa Chandler, who was granted asylum herself from Venezuela. And then we had Jeffrey Chase, Elizabeth Lamb, and Robert Weisel, who are all former immigration judges, which I think is really powerful because they have lived and breathed the immigration system in a way that I have enormous respect for.
I spoke with Alora and Ariane and Lee on the same week that President Trump was reportedly wondering aloud whether he could build a moat with alligators at the border.
Considering how absurd it is, how do you struggle with your degree of hope about whether or not your advocacy or the artistry when it comes to Waterwell can overcome the absurdity of the dialogue?
Waterwell's work gives me great hope. I've been working on Flores issues on and off for 12 years, and never before have we had a way to get children's voices and experiences to mass audiences. A lot of people aren't interested in spending their free time looking up legal documents and reading hundreds of pages of sworn testimony. But what Waterwell does is take the children's experiences and literally make them come alive and in a format that people might be willing to hear and share and raise awareness. And it hopefully will prompt people to action and to help people realize how serious the situation is, how dire it is. And so it gives me great hope to work with Waterwell.
And to respond to the world around her, as Lee did, as Waterwell does, and as Aryan, as an immigrant who hangs out with his mom, must every day.
As an immigrant, I am literally putting my entire faith and hopes in the United States Constitution. Like, literally, I have to, because I came from a country that doesn't do that. And for me, it's relevant because we're getting at a place where we can't even see, you know, what's that phrase? The smoke through the, what is that? Like,
the
forest through the trees. You know what I mean? We can't. And so for me, at this time period, whether you are a Republican that voted for Trump or a Democrat that voted for Hillary, I honestly don't even care. You can come to the room and see that there is a system in place right now that needs fixing. The immigration court system needs fixing. And if this can give you a glimpse of that, I think that is the hope. When we went down to the immigration court, I mean, it took every ounce of our energy not to like bawl out into tears after every case that went by us. Cause it's like, what's happening? Why is it? And they're churning out numerous cases with Department of Homeland Security that doesn't have the, It's like, it's a mess. It's a zoo. And they have to get their own lawyers, and they have to pay for their own lawyers, and they don't speak English. Is the translator there? Does the translator translate? It's like so much stuff. And also, I was 23 when I became a citizen, and I don't want to give too much away, but like...
Actually, let's not give that part away.
A rambling sentence to say there's 1,000 reasons why this is, I think, pretty relevant.
Rather than give away the ending, I asked Arian and Lee to set the stage with an early scene from the courtroom when Elizabeth Keithley first gets, well, lost in translation.
Okay, Miss Keithley, so...
I'm sorry, I should ask Alan. Were we recording?
Yeah, we're
okay, fair enough. Go ahead.
Okay, Miss Keithley, so you want a Tagalog interpreter?
I don't need one. Yeah.
You don't need an interpreter. Okay. I was only concerned that if there was something she by chance didn't understand, because she speaks good English, but in situations like this where there's, I was only being maybe overly protective. And if my client feels that she doesn't need an interpreter, then I will defer to my client. Do you feel you don't need an interpreter, ma'am?
No, just because I prefer to speak, because I don't know Tagalog, because I don't really know how to speak Tagalog or something.
So the judge is asking if we have a Visayan interpreter, which is what I requested.
Yes.
Would you be comfortable?
Yeah. Yes, Your Honor.
You're hired. You're hired. And I remember that moment. And it's, you're like, it's like, listen to her say.
Yeah.
Can we not get to the bottom of this before
you
the
gavel? Scream.
If
take the fucking
before
interpreter.
Before the gavel hits, can we please get to the bottom?
You want to scream, but you can't. Not in the courtroom, the real one or the play. But you can still go see it.
Once each month, we're going to do another performance of the courtroom at venues in New York City. And we hope that that provides a continued opportunity for people to come and engage with the immigration court system. And we are hoping to do that from now through the election in 2020. And then with the Flores exhibits, there's a lot of work that we're interested in doing now about continuing to build on our relationships with a bunch of amazing people that we've started to get to know in the immigration legal community, and use the Flores exhibits as hopefully a really effective tool to build on the kind of incredible advocacy and legal work that's happening to ensure that these protections are in place for children and families who are being held at border detention facilities.
The courtroom can be seen not in a theater near you, but in courtrooms and churches and civic buildings around town, where you can witness justice firsthand and a theater experience first rate. The Flores exhibits can be found at flores-exhibits.org. If you enjoy The Backdrop, please subscribe and rate the podcast on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you listen. The Backdrop is produced by Nella Vera, edited by Nella, and by me, and part of the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
Laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.